Hey, you guys, and happy Valentine's Day. We decided that, well, I decided, that since this is the movie retrospective that is going up on actual Valentine's Day, unless you're a patron, in which case you'll see it the day before, and because Shudder just added this slasher classic to its lineup, I decided, of course, we should do My Bloody Valentine from 1981.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should have done Friday the 13th, because we had a Friday the 13th this year, didn't we? It was in December or January.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
We didn't put that much thought into things.
I know.
We're just trying to get the show done.
That's true. It's like, I'm just kind of like, well, I was kind of planning on doing this one anyway, and then I was like, oh, Shudder added it. I was like, hooray, I don't have to rent it.
I mean, when you do the research for a show, you do the research for fucking sometimes 2 or 3 days.
Depending on what the topic
is. Depending on what the topic is.
I mean, some of the movies are a little bit easier, because then you can just watch it. Sometimes I watch it twice. Yeah. And then I'll usually like read through shit on it, watch documentaries about it, like watch other people's reviews of it, stuff like that. Sometimes, depending on what it is. But yeah, so My Bloody Valentine, which came out in 1981, this is a Canadian, slasher flick. And I feel like it's kind of, it doesn't get brought up a lot when you're talking about sort of classic slashers or, you know, kind of big ones in the genre, which is kind of a shame because this one, I always really dug this one. I think this is the first slasher movie I saw as a kid that made like a really big impression on me. Hmm. And so I must have seen it. I mean, it came out in 81, so I didn't see it in the theater. So I must have seen it on cable, which means I was probably 10 when I saw it first.
Yeah.
And it scared the crap out of me. I don't know why. Like, I watch it now, but it's like, I found it really, really scary. Like the miner, the killer with the pickaxe and everything. I found that really,
it's
like,
funny.
Terrifying.
This one really didn't stick out for me. I mean, I think cause I had seen stuff like Maniac and, Friday the 13th Part 1. I don't think I saw this at the time that it came. I don't think I saw most of these slashers at the time that they came out, really. I was watching them on HBO and Cinemax. So I never really could tell which ones were older than the other ones.
Yeah.
But I remember seeing this one and not being all that freaked out by it because I'd already seen some other ones.
Yeah.
That were a lot more intense. You
like
know?
I said, I think I might have seen some before this, but this was the first one that like scared me.
Okay.
And I think it was kind of like, I think it was the miner and the pickaxe, which you don't see a lot of slashers that use a pickaxe as a weapon.
Yeah.
Also, you know, just the kind of like the darkness and the claustrophobia of the mine and stuff like that, which I think was really well utilized.
I liked this movie, but as a kid, I kind of got it confused. I guess I kind of got it confused with Terror Train. Maybe put it on the same level.
Yeah, because Terror Train came out like the year before this one,
maybe
I think.
Maybe the year before?
Yeah.
Right. And I liked Terror Train, too, even though I don't remember Terror Train being very graphic.
Yeah.
I think somebody's head got stuck on one of those damn spikes that you put papers on.
Yeah. I remember that.
And maybe some people got
stuck. I just watched
that
like a year or two ago.
It was kind of like Friday the 13th on a damn train.
Yeah.
Except then when you find, and I remember that when you find out who is doing it, you're not too impressed. But I still like the movie.
Yeah. That's a great movie. We should actually probably review that one.
Yeah. I haven't seen it forever.
At some point. But yeah, so My Bloody Valentine came out, like I said, in 1981. This is a Canadian movie. Now, the guy that directed it, he was actually, I think he had done kind of a teen comedy type of thing called Pick Up Summer. And that was like pretty successful. So he got offered a 2-picture deal and they wanted him to do a slasher. Now, the original screenplay was actually just called The Secret. But since there had been like, you know, nothing to do with that fucking new agey kind of shit or whatever. But it's like,
that movie, that The Secret had me going for a little bit.
It had a lot of people going, including Oprah.
Going like, yeah. I mean, you know, your water, you know, your mind can affect the water. It's like, you know, your happy vibrations.
No, it really can't.
But then you kind of snapped me out of it. You're like, wait a minute, hold on. Think about what you're saying. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's just bullshit. Well, you know, I had a background of fucking seeing paranormal shit. So I thought maybe that might work. But that particular way of describing things, no, that's a philosophy. And
well,
it's
and like I said, it has a very dark side too, because the flip side to, if you wish for something hard enough, you'll get it.
Yeah.
That everybody that gets shit on in life, it's because
you wished for bad stuff.
You wish for bad stuff, you brought it all on
it's
yourself.
It's like victim blaming.
That's what I mean. So that's kind of another reason why. But anyway, so the original script is called The Secret, but because there had been such a, success with, slasher movies based around holidays, obviously, Black Christmas, Halloween, stuff like that. And I think even this year, 81, maybe Happy Birthday to Me. I think that came out as well. April Fool's Day.
You just reminded me of Happy Birthday to Me. We got to see that one too.
Movie.
I remember liking it.
Melissa Sue Anderson from Little House on the Prairie in it.
I can't remember. I can't remember anything about it. But as soon as you said that title, I remembered liking it.
You don't remember the shish kebab skewer?
Yep.
In the mouth.
Yeah, we got to see.
That's
it again.
Like the most iconic.
Got to see it again.
I just watched it again. That was probably like 3 or 4 years ago.
All right.
It's pretty good actually. Like I said, I remember that. The biggest thing making an impression other than the shish kebab thing was Melissa Sue Anderson being in it. Because that's the only other thing I'd seen her in besides Little House on the Prairie. I'm like, Mary, no! You know what I mean? Because I was kind of really...
Haven't seen this one again. This one's a lot better than I remembered it. The quality of the production is a lot better. And now that I'm thinking about Terror Train, I haven't seen those things in forever. Terror Train was probably pretty shitty compared to this one.
I remember liking Terror Train, though, when I watched it again a few years.
I was thinking of the quality of the production, though. Yeah. I have to see it again. Like, I used to think Friday the 13th, what was it? The 3D one was good.
Yeah.
Until I got it and watched it again. I was like, man, I used to like this.
Oof.
just one and two are good.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, and like I said, Friday the 13th too, which is also sort of a holiday themed slasher. So, so the producer was like, or the director was like, okay, well, what holidays haven't they done yet? So let's do Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Now, this was a Canadian production and it actually ended up costing about $2.5 million to make.
Hmm.
They shot it in Nova Scotia in a real abandoned mine.
Hmm.
So that kind of like, it's funny because they had like these two locations, right? Like these two mines they were going to use. They were both, closed. Like the one that they ended up using had been closed in 1975. So, The one that they decided to use in this little bitty town in Nova Scotia, the people in the town were so excited that they were going to shoot a movie there that they went into the mine and cleaned it all up.
Damn.
And they were like, well, we didn't want it all cleaned up. We wanted it all yucky and dirty because it's a horror movie.
Right.
So they had to go back in there and spend all this money to like fuck it
all
up.
Dirty it up again. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's so Canadian.
Right.
Like, we cleaned it all up for you guys. And they're like, fuck.
Yeah.
It was perfect the way it was. But yeah. So as you can imagine, filming in a real life mine, this mine is 2,700 feet in underground.
Yeah.
So all of these actors, they said the shoot was like fucking horrible because they really had to like go up and down like in this fucking, they were really down in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had to worry about all the same shit that miners have to worry about, like methane gas and like fucking... That, you know, they had all the equipment they had. You can only have so many light bulbs going because you didn't want any sparks or static electricity or anything.
One thing I got to hand to the movie is that, it did kind of have a good ambience. And it's because it was filmed on a location. So,
yeah.
You know, and they didn't spend any money for that location. That was a good idea to do that. They got a decent location for nothing, really.
And I wonder why they don't do it because, I mean, they film a lot of horror movies in, like, abandoned warehouses and shit like that. They don't utilize mines very much. And I wonder why, because mines have
the
that
conditions.
Darkness. But I know it sucked for these people, but, like, the movie came out pretty good because of it. Also, another thing that kind of sets this one apart from a lot of other slashers is that the victim pool... are older. They're not high school kids. They're not teenagers. They're like older. They're like working.
Yeah.
They're still young, but they're working.
They're adults.
And this is set in a very working class, community.
It is odd.
Which
you, think about
you
it.
Don't really see much. I mean, most of it look like Halloween, Friday the 13th, stuff like that. They're usually like middle class
motel
kids
hell.
Or college kids. Yeah, there
motel
you go.
Hell.
There's another
one. That was adults. That was a good one too.
There's another one, and like I said, you don't see a lot of ones like set in sort of a working class community like this.
Yeah, not many.
There's really not that many. So the basic premise.
Fog.
The fog.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
That in a way, this kind of like has a little bit. I don't want to say it's exactly the same because The Fog's more of a classic ghost story, and this is more of like a straight up slasher, but. In that sense of, you know, just that kind of small town, working class community, it really does have that same kind of...
As much as Carpenter was like disappointed with The Fog, that made a big impression on me as a kid.
Yeah, me too.
I loved that movie.
I thought it was super creepy.
Evidently, adults at the time weren't too impressed with it, but because it wasn't scary enough, but it was enough for a kid.
Yeah.
But we weren't paying for the tickets.
True.
So we weren't the intended model. We weren't the intended audience.
But yeah.
But when you're fucking 10 or 11, 12, see The Fog, it was like, oh, man.
Well, yeah, it was creepy.
Because you never really saw it very much, you know, just these fucking damn. I thought they were pirates because I wasn't really grasping the story when I was
right.
a kid. They were like pirates, more like lepers.
Yeah.
Lepers in a ship.
Yeah. But the thing, the kind of backstory about this is like, it's set in a fictional town. They shot it in a real town, but it's a fictional town called Valentine Bluffs. And apparently 20 years ago, in the mine where everybody works in this town, there was a big Valentine's dance, because that's kind of the whole, this town's whole thing is Valentine's Day. So they have this dance, and apparently a couple of the supervisors had gone to it, like they had gone off their shift early, like to go to this dance, and they had neglected to check the methane levels in the mine before they left. There was an explosion, and six miners were trapped in the mine. Now, five of the miners ended up dying, and the sixth one, Harry Warden, actually was stuck down there for 6 weeks, I think they said, and ended up having to eat the other miners to stay alive.
Yeah.
And by the time they found him, he was bonkers. Yeah. So they let him out, they got him out of the mine, and then he went and murdered the two people, that the two supervisors that had been responsible for the explosion, and then they put him in a mental institution. So this has happened 20 years before the, you know, the events of My Bloody Valentine. Now, they have not had a Valentine dance in 20 years in this town because Harry Warden warned everybody, if you guys have another big Valentine's Day dance or another celebration, I'm going to come back and kill all you motherfuckers. So they haven't done it. But finally, they're like, look, it's 20 years. It's like, everyone's probably fucking forgotten about that by now. Like, all the people that work in the mine now are young people. They don't even remember it because it was before they were born. So they're planning to have a big ass Valentine's Day dance. However, a couple of days before Valentine's Day, people start getting little heart-shaped candy boxes with big old bloody human hearts
in them
inside. That was something that really made a big impression. Like when the cop like gets the box and he reads the card and it sounds like kind of a little rhyme in there. It's kind of like, hey, everybody's gonna die, whatever. And then he opens it, and I was like, oh shit, there's like a big fucking bloody heart in there.
Yeah, and the hearts are much bigger than a human heart. They're like that. They're probably like a fucking beef
but it's
heart.
I mean,
I looked at it when I was a kid. I was like, man,
me
that's
too.
Fucked up.
I was just like,
I look at it now, and I'm going, yum.
I could eat that.
Yeah.
Thank you, whoever sent this to me. Secret admirer. Yeah. Sending me a beef heart.
A lot of Americans don't know about heart. Heart's good, man. Chicken heart, too. Shit.
He loves chicken hearts.
I love chicken hearts.
Yeah, I think you talked about that before on the show.
Yeah, like. Brazil did that to me. Going to Churrascaria, man. Going to Churrascaria to eat them damn whole swords filled with damn chicken hearts.
Sword with chicken hearts.
Yeah, the gal's just coming, pulling that, putting that on your plate. They eat like a dozen of them at a time.
And Tom just goes, hot.
Salted chicken hearts, yeah. Over an open fire. Ooh.
He's gotten them here a couple of times, too. I don't remember where you got them, but.
Texas to Brazil.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have, well, yeah, that's right. We have.
Yeah, they have a Churrascaria here.
Yeah. There's a couple of them. I've never been to
one. They're good. I'll take you. They're expensive, but it's good.
I don't want to eat
about
chicken hearts.
About 60, 70 bucks a night.
I can't get past chicken hearts.
70 bucks a person.
So, so people in the town start turning up dead. Most famously, Mabel, who works at the laundromat, or owns the laundromat. I guess she owns the laundromat. She gets killed by this big ass miner with a pickaxe, who pickaxes her and then puts her in the fucking dryer. And then the next day, they find her. She falls out of the dryer and she's like all burned and fucked up and like rolling around and shit like that. So the cool thing about this movie too, other than it being set in a working class community, which you don't see, other than, you know, the victims being a little bit older than your regular slasher victims, this also has kind of an element of whodunit to it.
Yeah.
Because even though you would think, because you've seen Halloween, you had seen other slashers where it's like, oh, the killer did this shit 20 years ago and then they were in an insane asylum and then they escaped and came back. And that's what everybody thinks in this movie too. But then some weird shit happens where they're like, they call the mental asylum and they're like, look, we don't have any like record of that guy, which means that he either like got transferred somewhere else or he died or we don't fucking know where, or he was never here. So that kind of like adds an element of, is this Harry Warden who has escaped and he's coming back and doing it? Or is it somebody else? Because since the killer is in a miner's outfit and every dude in the town and some of the women too work in the mines, it could be anybody because everybody has that outfit. And once people put that outfit on, they all kind of pretty much look like that.
Yeah.
So like I said, there's kind of a whodunit element too. And there's also, and I'm not going to say that like this isn't like 80s cheesy because it is. Like all the characters are very cheesy. There's like a couple of them are sort of over the top. But
it's in a good way though.
I
like that old style.
And they're actually, most of the characters are actually pretty likable.
Yeah.
You know, even the prankster guy who's kind of annoying as shit, but it's like, you know, the fat guys, whose name is Hollis, it's like, and then they set up like a love triangle, like between like one of the girls and she has like this one guy named TJ who was her boyfriend. And then he decided he was going to go try to make his fortune elsewhere, and he couldn't make it, so he has moved back.
Yeah.
In the meantime, she has gotten with his bro, like his, not his brother, but like his friend. Yeah. And so there's like a lot of tension going on there, like with three of them, and then finally she's fighting with them, and she doesn't want to be. But like I said, the characterization is really well done to an extent where you kind of feel bad when they get picked off.
Yeah.
It's not kind of just like, please die. You know what I mean? Like, cause some slasher movies are kind of like that.
That old 80s style when done right was really good because it was theatrical. It was comforting. Each character kind of was a part in a little morality tale. And there might be a couple of groups of people where little morality tales were kind of going if it was done right.
Yeah.
It was never supposed to illustrate realism.
Yeah.
It was never realism, not even back in the 80s. But I like it. And when it's done right, it's done. You still see it every now and then.
Yeah.
Them do it in a more modern movie. But I think the quest for realism is kind of destroying the entertainment factor for a lot of movies.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it depends on how
it's
done. It's because sometimes, like, realism, you know, will get you more invested in the story.
Depends on the kind of story it is.
It depends on what kind of story it is.
Yeah.
I do feel like people will forgive kind of over-the-top caricature sort of people, like in a slasher movie, because that's kind of one of the tropes of the genre.
Yeah.
And I think, really, when you're making a slasher movie, mostly people are watching it for the kills,
right.
For the tits.
And entertainment.
Just for an entertainment right. type of thing. Like, just, you know, kind of a scary popcorn movie.
Yeah.
They're not like...
Right. I love that tone and that style for horror.
Yeah.
For me, because realism in horror doesn't, for the most part, is not effective on me. It's not as entertaining. I don't know why. I don't know if it was maybe growing up watching, you know, From Beyond and Reanimator and Evil Dead. You know, those movies were never had a serious tone. They weren't supposed to. They were just fun to watch.
Yeah.
And in a way, the only tone that I thought maybe had a little bit of realism that was I thought was effective was like the first time I saw it would be like Friday the 13th or Halloween.
Yeah.
That's about as real as you want to go. And if you look at the little scenes for the teenagers before they got killed, there's not a lot of realism there either. People weren't like that even back then.
No. And like I said, I think that's the situation here as well. You have certain character archetypes that aren't really like real people, but in a way, they're like cinematic real people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's kind
they're
of
characters.
Like a, right. It's like a stock character.
Right. Yeah.
But like I said, I think they did a really good job, like kind of establishing, you know, kind of all the relationships between everybody. Another good thing that I like is that in this movie, they pulled kind of a Jaws where there's kind of a thing where once Mabel turns up in the dryer, the mayor basically says, okay, well, we're canceling the Valentine's dance. He doesn't fuck around. Like, he's like, look, whether this is Harry Warden or whether it's a copycat, somebody is warning us not to do the Valentine's dance, so we're not going to do it. So it wasn't kind of a thing where, you know, where the fucking Sheriff Brody is like, we have to close the beaches. And the mayor's like, no, we're not going to do that. The mayor said, yes, we're not having the Valentine's Day dance. But the killer ends up killing everybody anyway, because all the young people are so pissed off that the Valentine's dance is not going on that they said, well, we'll just have our own party.
Yeah.
And then shit goes on from there and they all get killed from there. Now, one thing that's very interesting about this is that it's funny because I was watching the version that's on Shudder. And I'm pretty sure that the version that's on Shudder is the theatrical cut, which means that there are several gore scenes that have been cut out of it. Because when I was watching it, I'm sitting there going, this is not as gory as I remember it being. Like you see some of the kills, but like they seemed like truncated. So when I was researching this, okay, so what happened with this movie? When it first came out, this is really dumb because the studio, I think it was Paramount, they had asked for a slasher movie and they gave them $2.5 million. And they said, because, you know, Friday the 13th had been such a big success and everything like that. So they said, well, we want to do a slasher movie. So they gave him the money to do it. And then when he produced the final movie, they cut out. Now he says it was 9 minutes, which is a lot. They said, well, you have to cut 9 minutes out of this or it's going to get an X rating. And obviously no horror movie wants to do that because then a lot of newspapers won't advertise it. A lot of theaters won't show it. I mean, especially back in those days.
Yeah, and there was no aftermarket back then.
Right. So, and there wasn't a lot you could do. I mean, theatrical release was like a big deal. So you pretty much had to take it in the butt, like if you wanted an R rating. So he says they took out 9 minutes. I don't know if all of it was gore. Some of it might have been some other shit because they did restore some of the gore later on and it was only about 2 or 3 minutes. So I think some of the other 9 minutes he was thinking about was just like some other character scenes and shit they took out.
I wonder if you can get it.
You can, okay. Because what ended up happening was that when they decided, I think it was in 2009 to do the remake, My Bloody Valentine, 3D, it was Lionsgate Studios. So they got the rights to My Bloody Valentine and they found the excised gore footage. And not only, I thought this was pretty cool of them. So when they put it out on Blu-ray to correspond with the remake coming out, they didn't just throw the deleted gore scenes into the deleted scenes extras. They actually took the time to edit them back into the movie where they were supposed to go.
Oh, great.
Now, the only thing about it is that if you watch, because I went on YouTube and somebody has put, like, some Russian person has put, like, all of the gore scenes that had been cut, and they put them all back in there. Now, you can tell because the movie was restored quite beautifully, because actually this does have really nice cinematography for an 81 slasher movie, surprisingly. Also has very, very good special effects, I have to say. Like, the practical effects are
That's what I was saying. I was saying it looked a lot better than I remembered it.
It did.
Yeah.
So, the only thing is that since the main movie was restored, when the gore scenes were put back in where they were, you can tell a little because they're not quite as good. You know, the film quality isn't quite as good because they had been like stored somewhere for such a long time.
Right.
But
harder to restore.
Yeah. So. But that's what was so funny is that, it's just funny that I thought, I was like, God, I remember that being so much gorier. And when you see the excised scenes, you can kind of see what ended up happening. I think they ended up cutting out so much because they didn't usually cut that much gore out of horror movies, especially slasher movies, especially ones that they had asked for Christ's sake. But I think what ended up happening was one, Friday the 13th had come out the year before and they kind of got a lot of backlash about how gory that was. Which is funny because it doesn't really seem that gory to me nowadays, but back then it was. Also, My Bloody Valentine came out not that long after John Lennon got shot. And for some reason, John Lennon's death was like such a big, like, cultural deal that like a lot of people were kind of like, didn't want violence and gore and shit. Like, we're complaining about it in movies.
I remember it.
Yeah. So,
it's because people in the news media were blaming movies for the increase in violence.
Right.
That's not what was happening. So they were blaming damn music and fucking video games, the beginnings of video games.
Yeah.
It was a trip. I remember a time where there weren't any video games where a human being was the target in the damn video games.
Yeah.
They did that for a while, except there was like a shoot out of an OK Corral type game. But
yeah.
Because I remember
it's funny, you could shoot all the people you wanted to in Westerns.
Yeah, in Westerns, it's all right. But
you shoot people in like another kind of movie, another video game, everyone loses their shit.
Yeah.
Or back then they did, at least.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, no one knows if that's why Paramount cut so much of it out. But when you see the excised gore scenes, like I said, this practical effects in this are very good. This is a pretty fucking gory movie. I mean, there's scenes where one guy gets a pickaxe, it goes through his chin and comes at his eye socket, and like the fucking eyeball comes out.
Remember that.
The woman in the dryer, they show it a little bit, like in the theatrical cut, but in the extended cut, I mean, they show her like she's hanging out and like flopping around like outside, and she's like all fucking burned off and shit like that. There's one scene at the end where they're all trying to escape from the mine and the elevator is broken because the killer has fucked it all up. And so they have to climb like 2,700 fucking feet, like up this fucking ladder. And one of their friends like comes down and he's like on a rope and the rope like pulls his neck taut and pulls his head off.
Yeah.
And then like the body falls and flops everywhere and shit like that. So it's like there's some really good gore effects in this, but I think, you know, we watched it a couple nights ago on Shudder and I was like, God, I feel like there's more gore in it than that. And then when I went and they were like, yeah, there was. So I guess the one that's on Shudder is not the extended cut. I guess it's the theatrical cut.
Yeah, you must have seen an extended cut at some time, huh?
I watched it. I watched all the cutout scenes today.
Oh, okay.
I found them all on YouTube. Because the Blu-ray, like I said,
okay, so
came
you never really saw the original one. You just
felt
like there was something that was missing.
Yeah, I guess not. Okay. I think because of the editing.
The editing, right.
And because I guess I was hearing chatter from like a lot of horror websites and stuff like that, that this was like a super gory movie And then I was, so they must have been talking about the extended cut, which I had never seen.
No, when I watched it with you, it was just, it was tame. I thought it was
tame. Yeah. Well, like I said, a lot of the gore has been cut out.
Right.
So,
That's why I put it up there with Terror Train, which I think is another Canadian one. And Terror Train, I remembered it scared me the first couple times I saw it as a kid. But then when I realized I didn't have to hide behind my eyes and look, that not a whole lot was happening.
Yeah.
And, I was under the impression that Canadian horror movies were not that gory.
But see, like I said, particularly with horror movies, you really have to do your research. If you see something, particularly a slasher movie, and you're just like, man, that was like the gore and that was really lame, you should go look because a lot of times shit got cut out.
Got cut out, maybe. Because what's his name was Canadian and he made some pretty, you know, the guy from Videodrome.
David Cronenberg. He made some fucked up shit.
So I don't know. I just remember being a kid under the impression that Canadian movies weren't as gory. But it might have been just because of those two movies. As just during that time.
And you never know. Like I said.
Sometimes you don't know it's a Canadian movie too.
And I actually think when I saw this as a kid, I don't think I realized it was that it was Canadian. Yeah. Even though, I mean, the way that the people talk should have given it away.
Yeah, strange accent. Like, I had to ask her. So where the hell is this happening?
And I said, I called it. I said, I think it's Nova Scotia. It was.
Okay. Because it sounded like. Like somebody caught making like a bad impersonation of an Irish accent.
So yeah, it was certain Canadian. Times
it was Canadian, right?
Another funny thing about this, and I saw some other review. Maybe it was Bloodbath and Beyond. I don't know, but that were reviewing this movie, and they said, "Did fucking Moosehead Beer like pay for this movie?"
Because
because pretty much every scene. There's a lot of scenes take place in Happy's bar, and you know they're all drinking like Moosehead beer.
Yeah.
Even in the fucking laundromat scene, like where Mabel finds the fucking finds the candy box before she gets axed. She has like a box with Valentine's decorations and it's in Moosehead beer.
Yeah, I remember that shit.
And stuff like that. I noticed it a little bit when we were watching it because I'm like, oh, I guess Moosehead like paid for some product placement. But when I watched it back again, I was like, oh yeah, fucking Moosehead beer. They're all over this stuff.
We had it in Michigan.
Yeah.
Moosehead.
It's a very Canadian.
Yeah, it was just shit, you know, just like anything else. I really couldn't tell it from American beer at the time.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had it, honestly.
Like,
I don't think
like Miller.
I don't think they sell it down here.
Yeah.
It's just
from what I remember.
It's kind of one of those things.
Right.
Now, like I said, in 2009, I think, they did a remake of this, which was in 3D, you guys. Yeah. I have seen the remake. I remember it being okay, like being not terrible. The 3D is actually pretty well done. There were some practical effects, but a lot of it was CGI, which, you know. There was kind of a cool scene where, because fucking Tom Atkins was in that shit.
Hmm.
And there was one scene where he got the pickaxe through here, but it pulled his jaw off, and then the jaw came right at your face!
Damn.
Also, there was a great scene where one girl got, like, the shovel, like, through the mouth gag.
Yeah.
Kind of like Tom Savini did that, like, back in the 80s. But that, and then, like, her head slides, like, the top half of her head, like, slides forward. Yeah. And then, like, the bottom half of the falls. So that looked pretty cool, like, in 3D and everything. Like I said, the remake was not awful. But, honestly, I think the practical effects in the original one, like I said, particularly in the extended cut, I think they just look a lot better. Practical effects in general always look a lot better. But, you know... This is kind of one of those, I feel like poor Canada, they kind of get forgotten about, particularly in the horror movie, slasher movie kind of stuff. I mean, they made fucking Black Christmas, man. That's like one of the best, one of the earliest slashers.
Yeah, I'd have to say where I'm going to put it, I'm going to put it up there with Terror Train from what I remember.
Yeah.
Production values and quality, it's higher than Friday the 13th 1 and 2.
It is. It's shot much nicer.
Shot a lot better. I think the acting is probably better.
Although
I think 1 and 2... Friday the 13th had a bigger impact.
I had more fun
watching that, I think. This one almost has a little bit too much dialogue, almost too much story to it. It would have been better if they dumbed it down and just, you know what I mean?
Although there's a lot of kills in this. I watched Kill Count. There's a really funny channel called Kill Count where he like talks about the movies and says how many people die in it and how they died. 16 people get killed in this movie.
It just seems like there's a lot of dialogue for what it is.
Yeah.
It was just kind of wordy. And it was like they're having scenes to have a scene.
Yeah,
that's
maybe.
That's what it kind of felt like. But you know what? It's not a bad movie. It's a good movie.
Yeah, I definitely think it's one of the better slashers.
Yeah, it's a good, it's high quality.
And I'm really, here's one thing that amazed me. One, I'm amazed that more horror movies don't use Valentine's Day as a thing because red hearts, yeah. Come on now. You know, love, unrequited, yeah. Whatever, revenge, that type of stuff. Also, I'm really sad that the minor killer, didn't get a franchise, which is really weird because that, I mean, the minor getup, it's like he kind of breathes like Darth Vader because he's got the breath thing. It's like he's got a fucking pickaxe, man.
Yeah.
That's cool.
He wasn't deformed, though.
True.
If he was deformed, like Jason Voorhees or something, it would have been more American. It'd have been American as shit.
True.
He should have been burned up or had something really wrong with him so he could take that mask off and he would just look like a monster.
Yeah.
That's what you
know. And I mean, the end of this, I don't necessarily want to, because I said it's kind of like a whodunit. I know it's 1981, but I know probably a lot of people haven't seen it, so I'm not going to spoil like who the killer actually ended up being. But they left it open at the end where if they had wanted to do a sequel, they could have. It would have been like pretty easy to do.
Yeah.
But for some reason, they just never did. And it's weird because it seemed like a lot of movies that did worse than this or had less of a cult following than this got a whole franchise, and this one never got one. It got a remake, but that's it.
Friday the 13th and Halloween was a lot cheaper, and it was kicking this movie's ass.
I guess so.
Yeah, Friday the 13th just sold lots of tickets.
Yeah, I mean, this one made more than twice its budget back, but it didn't make
still pretty good.
It didn't make as much as Friday the 13th, so I guess they just figured, meh, whatever.
And the overheads and
Canada.
Stuff. Even though, I don't know. I don't know what it cost them to make this.
$2.5 million.
How much did it cost to make Friday the 13th?
Oh, you know what? I don't know. I don't know. Probably a lot less. Probably.
Yeah. Probably half that.
Because, I mean, this one, I feel like since they shot it in a real non-working mine, I would imagine that the insurance and, like, all the safety equipment and all the shit like that they had to do probably ate up quite a bit.
What made the American slasher work was that, you know, you could just take some unknown actors and actresses, not pay them much, and for $1 million, make it basically kind of just like an entertaining piece of shit movie that you could make a bunch of profit at the box office, and then it would go on to Cinemax or HBO.
Why do you think
run forever?
Why do you think there were so many of these?
Yeah, and then later it would actually, you could do a lot of VHS action from fucking Blockbuster.
Yeah.
They made a lot of money over time with a very small investment, and that was the beauty of slasher and horror movies.
Yeah, slasher I mean, movies. Particularly the slasher movies. I think nowadays, like, well, maybe not nowadays, but, you know, a few years ago, probably the equivalent would be like a zombie movie because you can make them for very
pretty
cheap.
Much nothing, right.
And, you know, but back in the 80s, we were like, we didn't have the internet. We were just like starved for entertainment.
Yeah.
And people that loved horror movies, you just went to the video, so you saw every fucking one because it's like, what the hell else are you
And you'd
do,
see
right?
them from, and you'd see them multiple times.
Yeah.
This isn't something, you know, kids today or whatever, people today, they're not watching movies. I'm saying them kids today.
God damn it. Rawr, in my day.
Well, they're watching things over their phones.
Right.
They're almost kind of immune to imagery because they're bombarded with imagery constantly and lots of information and pretty good quality information compared to what we used to have.
Yeah.
So, movies like this aren't very, you know, if they watch it once, they go, yeah, I watch it, yeah. Well, we were almost brainwashed with them.
Well, yeah, because like I said,
we'd watch
really
them things 30,
other...
40 times because it just, we'd run out. Well, I say, I don't want to watch that. I'm going to put Friday the 13th in two again.
That's what, well,
just
yeah.
Just let the shit run.
I was just going to say, I mean, I taped Friday the 13th part two off Cinemax or HBO or whatever. Yeah. I must have watched that fucking thing 400 fucking times. Because it's just every few weeks, and Fright Night as well.
Yeah, and your friends.
Every few weeks, you'd be like, let's watch that again.
Yeah, and your friends are like, wait, watch, back it up. Okay, now, frame by frame, we watch that shit. Watch some of those scenes by, look what they did. You see what they did? Oh, that's a different shot. You know what I mean? That's a dummy. You know, that kind of stuff.
Oh, you try to like, you try
to...
Yeah,
picking apart the special effects.
The special effects.
Yeah, watching them frame by frame and shit.
See, I never wanted to do that. I was just
well,
like,
after you burned it out so much.
That's true.
After you're like watching after you've it seen all different it for ways. Fucking 30 times, you all might right, as well just enough. Slow it down. Let's see that again. You know, slow motion.
But yeah, seriously, if you're into slasher movies and you somehow didn't get around to seeing this one, because like I said, this one's a little bit of a forgotten gem. And I thought that, well, because Shudder just added it happily. Even though I was planning on doing it anyway, I said, oh shit, man, this is coming out on Valentine's Day. We got to do My Bloody Valentine. And especially because that fucking killer with the pig, the one scene where the old guy has set up the fucking fake miner that, like, is supposed to, like, the pickaxe goes like that, like, when you open the door, like, he has no string. And the one scene where he just keeps opening it, and he keeps it, and he's like, oh, man, that's so funny. And then he opens it, and then the real guy is there, and then, like, puts the pickaxe up through the fucking his face and everything. Oh, that scared the crap out of me. Like, I was really little when I saw that, and then, like, I stayed awake all night thinking that, like, a pickaxe-wielding miner was going to come out of my bedroom closet. So it's like, yeah, so... This is, I wouldn't recommend it to anybody that isn't into, like, 80s slasher movies, but if you're into 80s slasher movies, and especially, like, holiday-themed ones, then you really need to see this one if you haven't. Themed, well, like I said, that's why that was such a thing. There was such a thing. I think that it's like, I could think, although I could think of, like, a lot of fucking holidays that they didn't
do. Every single one of them was fucking named after some kind of damn day.
It was,
yeah. It was a fucking trope. It was burning itself out.
Yeah. Well, this was an early example of it. I mean, there had been, obviously, there'd been Friday the 13th, there'd been Halloween, there'd been Black Christmas.
Yeah.
And there'd been a couple of other, like, Christmas-themed ones, but I think, I'm pretty sure this was the first Valentine's
Day. That's why we wanted to go down the H.P. Lovecraft.
It's not a holiday.
Yeah. It's not a holiday, and it's H.P. Lovecraft. And we didn't even know, we didn't really know who H.P. Lovecraft was at the time. You know, right. We were like, man, where does he live? You know?
We gotta go talk to.
Yeah, we gotta talk to that dude. Yeah.
I'm just laughing at, like, you and your little friends, like, going over at H.P. Lovecraft.
Where's that motherfucker live? He's from California.
Knocking on the door.
Yeah, yeah.
Hello, Mr. He's Lovecraft. From California. We just saw your latest movie. We enjoyed it very much.
Well, it wasn't like you could go online and find out who H.P. Lovecraft was.
Right, that's true.
You would never think to ask your librarian.
I did, because I was a nerd.
Yeah, not us. We'd be like, she wouldn't know. That's cool shit.
Do you know, back in the old days, you used to call the library.
And you could
and the librarian would look it up for you. Because I did that a few times.
Yeah, I guess you could.
Yeah, you could. Like, the librarian would look it up for you. Holy crap, we're so old.
That was shit smart people did.
Yeah, see? That's what I mean. We didn't do it. I did that kind of shit. Or I would just go to the library and
find it myself. We'd rather just stay in the dark. It's actually my friend Jason Quinlan finally showed up with H.P. Lovecraft books.
Yeah.
And explained it to us. Like, oh, all right. And he just.
And he was like the guru.
He would tell us what it was about. We didn't really want to, like,
read it.
We didn't want to read it. He would tell us what it was about. Words. Like, yeah, we didn't have time for that shit.
Nerd pal.
Yeah. We would just marvel over what he told us. I ended up reading in the Mountains of Madness.
Yeah.
And there was a couple other ones that I read. Dunwich Horror.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't think I saw. Not Color Out of Space. One with the damn aliens.
Well, that could be a lot of them.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll never remember it.
You know what's really weird? One of my favorite.
They were going to take him back to the planet that he came from. And they had to take him in a jar.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Body. Oh shit, man. We saw the H.P. Lovecraft Society did a film of that.
Yeah, because it was one of the better stories. I only read the good stories.
Yeah.
Some of the other ones are little small stories. They're good, but.
For some reason, I really dug Pickman's Model.
Yeah.
I don't know why. That one just made a really big impression on me when I was a kid. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, so like I said, if you're into holiday slashers from the 80s, you really need to check this one out because I feel like a lot of people probably haven't seen it. Remake is okay too, but I would actually recommend the original over it just because the practical effects are better, even though the remake is totally fine. Also, we need to do April Fool's Day one of these days too, because I fucking love that movie.
We need to go do Terror Train.
And we'll do Terror Train, yeah. Right. I need to write all this shit down. But yeah, so anyway, check it out. It's on Shudder. Like I said, it's not the extended cut, it's the theatrical cut. So keep in mind that there's a lot more gore that you're missing out on. So go to YouTube and find those scenes if you really want to see it. And happy Valentine's Day. We will see you next time. Bye.